Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Terp fans? Fred, Ryan, and Ahmed, Mr. Gafir the Turtle himself, back again for the first time in a while. It's been a while since the three of us have been back, fellas. I like it.
Yeah, definitely been a while since the trio was in town.
Yeah, it's good to all get on the same page, and good show ahead.
Yeah, man, it's been a wild couple of weeks for Terps Athletics. As we're going to discuss the departure of one Mark Turgeon from the Hoops program and the trail that's kind of left behind.
That has been a crazy situation. A little bit more exciting situation is the football team's officially going bowling with a matchup against an old ACC foe, Virginia Tech, in the Pinstripe Bowl.
Yep. And next week we have the early signing period. So with some, final high school names, some portal rumblings, we'll discuss those guys floating around campus.
All right. Well, before we get too far into hoops and too far into football, we got to talk about the latest partnership with the university. And to me, this is a big one. PointsBet USA will now be the official sports betting partner in a seven-figure deal, apparently, for the university. First of its kind in the Big Ten. This has been getting some mixed reviews amongst fans and Terp Nation. Haven't talked to you guys much about this yet. First takes on this deal.
Don't know what the bad news could be. The only bad news could be is if this seven-figure deal is exactly seven figures. Like, it better be a good deal, because I think every deal with University of Maryland is a seven-figure
deal. What about, like, a Pat McAfee kind of deal?
Yeah, like, if it's a Pat McAfee kind of deal, I'm good with that. Right. If you're mad at this, you're just mad at sports betting. And that's just the way life's happening right now. I mean, Maryland has got sports betting officially live today at MGM. There's going to be more casinos going, and supposedly by the end of next year, it's going to be live on your cell phone. So it's a reality of the future. So if you want to get on your moral high horse and be upset about it, okay. But a large majority of people in that stadium are going to be on their phones placing sports bets, whether you make money on it or not. So you might as well get ahead of it.
Yeah, it's happening illegally already. So already. Why not cash in if you can?
Yeah, exactly. I know that Maryland's the first Big Ten program, but they aren't the first school, because University of Colorado, University of Denver, LSU, UNLV, those are some of the other schools that have done this as well. So to me, it just felt like, kind of getting ahead of itself. I mean, I think it's it would be a little, ignorant from a business perspective to completely ignore just the rise of sports betting, especially in 2021 going into 2022. So makes sense to me.
I will say, we don't fit into that list of schools there. You got, like, the weed capital of the world. You got Sin City itself. And then LSU, where I think murder's legal as long as you play football well. So it doesn't.
And UNLV, really, I mean, that makes category. Sense. UNLV.
Yeah, Sin City itself. Right. You're already gambling everywhere anyway.
Exactly. And, I mean, obviously, the deal with sports betting in Maryland coming to fruition this week. Actually, I think today was the day the governor was supposed to be making the first sports bet down at MGM National Harbor. This was just kind of it was bound to happen at some point. And I'm glad Maryland is kind of ahead of the curve in this. PointsBet CEO Johnny Aiken was quoted as saying, "Sports betting education and safe gambling is key to our long-term strategy, and it's making a tangible impact on the communities we invest in. With the partnership, we are looking forward to raising awareness and educating our student athlete and university community on responsible gambling."
I think it's so cute when they do that. Like, it's the law. It's the law that you have to spend basically equal amount of money both preventing a gambling addiction and promoting gambling. It's a law everywhere. Right. So, like, you're just like, yeah, it's a key to our business model. No, you wish it wasn't key to your business model, but you're forced to make it a part of your business model in order to stay in business.
Right. Yeah, they're going to teach everyone how to properly hedge all your bets.
Exactly. I think this is a very good move for the university. If it brings more cash flow in, that's great. And the Terps are going to need some cash flow, man. Let's start off with the basketball squad. And obviously the big news that's been, I guess, now 6 days since the announcement is Mark Turgeon submitted his resignation as Terps head coach of the men's basketball program. This was, for me, this was a move that was, I kind of think, long overdue. I just didn't expect it to happen mid-season like this, right after the extension. And it doesn't sound like this was a program decision. This sounds like, I guess, everything from what we heard with the fans at the Len Bias game and just the overwhelming, reception of Mark Turgeon recently has been pretty negative, and it's took its toll on him and his family.
Yeah, I was at the Virginia Tech game covering it, and you know, I remember hearing a couple students near the press row chanting "Fire Turgeon" in the pregame intros, and you know, I felt like Turgeon, you know, obviously it's been a couple of years now where he hasn't really been on the good side of the overall fan base, I'd say. But I think that was one of the first times I ever heard it in pregame intros, especially on Len Bias night, right, when you're introducing all of that. And it just, after the game, just felt so angry in there. And I think that was the first time in my head where I was like, this is not going to work out. Like, if it doesn't turn around, it's not going to turn. It's not going to work out. You know, Friday's news was very surprising. But then when you kind of think of everything that happened from that game, you know, and Damon at this point, he's even been transparent. I believe he was on 105.7 The Fan today. I think I saw where he was saying that it kind of started right after the Virginia Tech game. Conversations led into it. So at this point, it's a major shock to end at this point of his career, 11 seasons, ended at 5-3 at that point, especially just months removed from a contract extension. Surprising, but it really was inevitable. You couldn't defend it, I think, at that point.
And listen, I'm okay with, if you're a fan and you're paying to be there at these games, you have the right to cheer, you have the right to boo, right? But there's boundaries to that, right? And there's borderlines of where it becomes disrespectful and it becomes over the top. And to boo this man as he's coming onto the court on a night where they're recognizing Len Bias, you know, one of the greatest, not just Terps, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. It just goes to show the state of this fan base right now. And I know, Ryan, I know you're very opinionated on this topic itself. What's your take on this entire situation?
I think that rights are earned. And I think that a lot of these people involved didn't earn them. You know, we've had the loud mouths on social medias for years talking about Fire Herge, Hate Turge,
Keyboard Warriors,
Coach, the Keyboard Warriors out there. You know, and a lot of the points are realistic, but it just goes too far. I mean, you guys know out there, I've never been like a, you know, Turge is the greatest coach in the world guy. But I mean, I put out the like Fire Turge ? Ryan's rants, where it came down to like, why Fire Turge? Because what are you bringing in here that's better? You don't have anything to offer to be better. So, like, figure it out and calm down and have an option. I've always said that complaining without a solution is just whining. And that's what people have been doing forever. And especially this group of kids that booed before the game at Len Bias night really got to me, because we've seen these games. They've been empty. They've been completely empty. There's no students there. There's no fans there. And last year, there literally was no one there. So where did you grow this opinion from? Half the students at University of Maryland have never been to a basketball game because you weren't allowed to. And the other half, who knows? So to show up and boo on a night that I'm certain meant more to Mark Turgeon than it did to these students, and boo before the game even started, was terrible. I don't care what you did afterwards. You can get angry, you can get upset, you can boo, but just the entrance is kind of out of bounds for me. And it just kind of blows my mind that this is how this ended, was with just like an angry mob. That's right. Not how you're supposed to make decisions. That's kind of how Durkin got put out of here, like, for better reason. But like, they rehired him and then they're like, wait, people are mad, let's get rid of him. Like, I hate when the people that are angry make the decision. The business people make a decision. Whether it was a right or wrong decision in that case, you know, I think it was the right eventually. But the fact that you let angry people make the decision is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you know, I know obviously people at this point know that, you know, I went to Maryland twice, you know, undergrad and grad school. So like, you know, I think the part that kind of irritated me about this detergent tenure was just the last couple of years that like you couldn't ever have just a discussion about Maryland basketball. You couldn't have anything about like on court or anything like that. And everything just centered around the eventual hatred for Turgeon. And like, yep. I agree. There are things that, you know, just the half court offense. I mean, I'm not going to miss that at all.
The weave and heave running. Is not going to be missed ever.
Yeah, but it just that's just I think like what didn't sit well with me. And
the inbound plays will never be missed. Like there are real complaints that you could have about Turge, but not just yell and scream about him.
Right, exactly. If there's three things that you judge a coach on, especially at the collegiate level, you judge them on the recruiting, you judge them on their in-game coaching, and you judge them on how they make adjustments. And really, he's only very good at one of those things. He's very good at recruiting, right? I think we all kind of feel the same way. None of us were pounding our chest for Turge to be gone, but we all understood why the time for his replacement could be coming. I mean, we're talking about a coach who's been here for 10 plus years. He's taken them, yes, to the tournament five of those 10 years, but he's only been to the Sweet 16 once, right? And this fan base, again, the way that they are, and this is just the state of Maryland thing. This is the way they are with Orioles, with the Ravens, with the Terps. The expectations are just so unrealistically high for the fan base, and that's included with the Terps. One Sweet 16 in 10 years just isn't going to get it done, even when you are attracting these bigger names.
Exactly. And you mentioned, I think, you know, recruiting, I think it kind of tailed off over the last couple of years. I mean, I think at this point, I remember even talking to Rodney Rice a couple of times. He's a 4-star combo guard at DeMatha. And of course, you know, it's DeMatha. Maryland hasn't gotten a kid from DeMatha in God knows how long.
Right.
But he was like, I haven't heard from Turgeon since March or April or whenever. He took a brief visit. I remember one time, I think. And then, ever since then, I remember I checked in June, July, and August. He's like, nope, haven't heard from Maryland. I was like, all right. So, it just kind of tails off at some point. And, like you said, there's the one Sweet 16, and then you look at the teams that Turgeon won against in the NCAA tournament. So that didn't really generate much excitement. So I get it. I think it's been pretty clear that, Maryland doesn't need someone. Possibly, I think maybe with some winning under their belt for the next coach, but just the paper result at this point, just we're not cutting it.
Before we move on, I do want to plug a friend's podcast here. We are talking a little bit of Len Bias night. The Len Bias podcast came out. The 34+1 podcast is now live. They also have on the Terrapin Plus network. Kind of the video version with a few extra kind of interviews and incentive type things. So if you are a Terrapin Club member at that level and have access to Terrapin Club Plus, make sure to check that out.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're one of those spoiled snot ass kids that didn't know who Len Bias was and was booing before the game.
Learn yourself something. I like it. Dewey and the crew over there doing big things, man. All right. So the next move for the university is going to be obviously the replacement of Mark Turgeon. In the interim, assistant head coach Danny Manning is going to be the coach, at least it sounds like, for the rest of this year, obviously based on his, you know, what they do between now and the end of the year will help his stance as whether he ends up staying on board as a head coach. But there's a ton of names, some realistic, some completely not, but there's a ton of names floating around in Terp Nation right now. Of potential replacements. So I thought this would be a fun way for us to kind of just go down a list, give out some names that we think are realistic, maybe some long shots, some not worth the risk, and some just unrealistic names out there. We'll talk about Danny Manning and kind of what he brings to this program after this, but some names being out there, the one that's popular right now, he's young, he was just here, and he beat Maryland, so it has to work, right? Kim English out of George Mason. What do you guys think?
I think that people only want it because he just beat Turge. And if you think Turge is so bad, maybe I could have coached and beat Turge. So I don't know why we're really discussing it, but I don't know as much as Ahmed here, so I'm interested to find out what he says.
Yeah, he's a local guy. I remember he played, 2 years, I think, with the Pistons. So he's considered a kind of young, up-and-coming coach. So I think it's kind of given his local ties to the area and the fact that he's had that, you know, reached the NBA for a couple of seasons, and I think he played professionally elsewhere for a couple of seasons as well. But I think it's a sensible name, and I've seen that, you know, kind of, I think it was The Athletic, NBC, a couple other national outlets. So I understand, you know, at this point why he's being included.
He won't have to sell his house, so I guess that'll give us a discount, right?
$500,000 over. That's what the asking price is right now. You got Kevin Willard. Kevin Willard got Iona rolling, then took over at Seton Hall, which he's been there for 11 seasons, has four tourney bids. What's your thoughts on Kevin Willard?
I mean, anybody that's getting those teams to the tourney each year is worth taking a look at. I got no problem with the name. I don't know if he's any better or worse for me than other ones. I only have really one name that stands out for me that we'll be getting to later. So it is what it is. I would not be mad at any of these guys, really.
Yeah, I think before last season he finished 14-13 at Seton Hall, but before that he took Seton Hall to five consecutive 20-win seasons. Yet to make it 2016 though, so I do think that's kind of notable. I do think it's a great fit. I do think kind of personality wise, just with his recruiting footprint, I do at this stage understand why he'd be tied to the job. But again, just the 1-16, and if Turgeon's 1-16 in 11 years. Doesn't cut it. Well, Kevin Willard's now in a 12th season. So that's only reservation that I have there.
Another name that I kind of have in high regard, but I don't know if Maryland would be a big enough job for him to swing what he's got right now. Andy Enfield. Talk about USC and the money that's going on out there at USC with the football program. Well, he's been there now for 8 years. He's got three tourney bids, one down to the Elite Eight. He's a hot name out on the market. And I just, again, leaving the lush life of being out there in California, I don't know how much better of a program Maryland would be. Am I wrong?
He did get his MBA here at Maryland. So that is one connection that I did hear. That
he played at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, right down the street. Exactly. And he has some relationships with some people in the athletic department. I think that's an intriguing name. And financially right now, I think that contract, I don't think I've seen the official details of the contract, but it's not expected to be overly competitive like Nate Oates, Eric Musselman, Bruce Pearl kind of guy. So we'll see.
He's my guy, really. This is the one I was kind of hinting at. This is the one I kind of hope for. It has a Gary Williams-esque feel where you're pulling him from a school that you think can outbid the hell out of you,
right?
Because he came from Ohio State to Maryland and gave up the lush life of Columbus, Ohio, and being, you know, of course you're second string to the football, but you're still a god out there being at a big time program at the biggest school that, you know, they just bleed and die their college sports. So USC feels a little bit like that. If they wanted to outbid us, certainly they could,
right?
But while they're in the middle of this football thing and dumping money into fixing that program, will they? I'm not sure. And maybe just the pull to go home is enough to get them out of there.
That'd be so nice.
This is kind of, you know, I'm not going to be upset if it doesn't happen, but this will be the one that I would really pump my fist and just feel like it was that Loxley-esque, the hometown guy, got his MBA here, played up the street at Hopkins, where if he really works, you might actually be able to hold on to him, that kind of thing.
Right. That makes sense. Again, that's a guy I didn't realize he had the local ties. That's a guy I've had on my radar, and I would really like to see him here. Guy that, Ahmed, you mentioned to me before we went live here that I hadn't really thought about, out of Ohio State, Chris Holtmann. What's your take on Chris as a potential target?
Yeah, I think he's kind of intriguing. I think that the fact that he's already kind of been known to be a successful coach going into Ohio State has not proven it to be Ohio State. And I think the fact that we kind of talked about, you know, Ryan, you mentioned, you know, Ohio State having all that money out and, you know, in that athletic department. But I just kind of think the fact that Maryland basketball, I think the exposure, maybe the recognition is, I would say, definitely a hair above Ohio State right now. So I think that's kind of why it's intriguing. And right now, I don't believe that that contract for him right now is also too expensive. Right now, he's making $3.08 million per year. So I think it's an intriguing name, and I've seen his name floated around. So I think, you know, a week out, I think it's fair. But again, I don't know what interest level or anything like that. So it'll be interesting.
Right.
To me, he's just one of those names that if we would have got the training facility completed or even started, maybe you pull. But with that shelved, with not having that on the on the timeline to know when he's going to be able to do that, I don't know if he's going to come play with the logistics here when he could have everything at his use at Ohio State.
To that point, is there any light at the end of the tunnel with the practice facility that we've heard, or is it still on hold?
Well, have you won the lotto yet, Fred?
I have not.
We're the only ones that would maybe give
what's
that money.
The billboard in the city at right now? Because that'll dictate whether I go buy
totally,
a ticket or not.
Totally, we got it. $250 yeah. billion or something.
Oh, all right, then I'm buying a ticket.
Yeah, I've heard it's supposed to start next summer, but it's Maryland, so we saw how long the football facility took. Yeah. So
it's always fluid.
We also saw the expansion of the ring and the field that was supposed to be lowered. Thank God that didn't happen. It would have made my seats cost way too much.
All right, another name realistic that's out there, BYU, Mark Pope. Guy 121-71 all time, including 44-15 at BYU through two seasons. He's coached his way to four consecutive 20-win seasons right now. I mean, he's done it very well at a very small program out in BYU.
Yeah, he started out 77-56 out at Utah State, four seasons there, went to BYU, first two seasons, 44-15. He's only 49 years old, so a guy that's already kind of proven that he's been able to achieve that success. Maryland would definitely be a very big step up, but I think kind of 49 years old, he doesn't really have the regional ties to my knowledge, but I do think that he could be a guy that could be successful here.
And there lies my problem. Mark Turgeon inherited a happy Maryland fan base, and it tore him apart. This next coach is inheriting angry fans that wanted to fire Turgeon. They want to fire Locksley in between the bowl game and the 500 season that we haven't seen in 5 years. There's just angry people everywhere, and I just don't think a guy that has done it at Utah and BYU has proved they can deal with any kind of adversity anywhere near that level from media, fans, anybody like that, especially with not being from New York, New Jersey, Maryland, angry people world. So I am hesitant in throwing him to the wolves.
Well, on the other side of that, a guy who does have a lot of local connections, the Louisville assistant, is it Mike Pegues? Is that his name? Pegues?
Yeah, Pegues.
Pegues?
Yeah, okay. DC native. DC native. He went to DeMatha, been with Chris Mack at Xavier, and then now at Louisville since 2012. I actually didn't have him on my first list, and then as soon as I saw someone mention him, I was like, yeah, that's a perfect name. He's been an assistant. Has not had the head coaching experience just yet, so that will be kind of intriguing to me, but definitely a guy just given his local connection, understandable why he'd be tied to the job.
Yeah, it's a big jump from a Louisville assistant to head coach at Maryland, but if again, he could handle what I was worried about with the last guy. So
I wanted to get your guys.
If they really want to do that, they can do that.
I wanted to get your guys' take on how important the local tie connection is anymore with the free agency that is the transfer portal now. Has it lost a little bit of its importance because you can so quickly turn a roster over by going and getting players that are immediately eligible?
But that goes both ways, though. I mean, you saw definitely some local guys goes in the portal. And same thing happens with football. So I think there'll always be that connection. Just having these connections locally for whenever a guy becomes available, whether maybe it's a freshman or a senior, I don't put that as much emphasis in that as much as I guess you thought.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know that it matters because I think we've always overrated our ability to keep guys home. These guys are usually playing a place where they want to get out of. They want to go see the world. They want to spend 4 years, doing something else than what they know. So the ones that want to play at home are always going to play at home no matter who it is.
Right.
You're not just going to convince a kid to play at home. He'll have wanted to do that. That's kind of my thought process on that.
Makes sense. Another name out there, Mike Boynton out of Oklahoma State. This guy, he apparently hired Cade Cunningham's dad, succeeded Brad Underwood at Oklahoma State, pair of 20-win seasons on his record as well. This seems like a guy that would make a lot of sense too.
Yeah, he actually was under Brad Underwood, and then Brad Underwood took the Illinois job, so then Mike Boynton stepped in. Before that, he'd been an assistant at, obviously, Oklahoma State, and then Stephen F. Austin, South Carolina, Coastal Carolina. He's from New York, so again, just kind of another up-and-comer, 39 years old, would be kind of an intriguing name.
I don't know anything else to add other than it wasn't Underwood that president that killed everybody? That Netflix show. That.
I'm not ready to say that. Those are your words.
Well, another name that Ahmed, you had brought up prior to going live as well that I hadn't really thought about, but I think makes a lot of sense. Again, a name that a lot of people locally are going to know, Ryan Odom, who's now out at his first year at Utah State. He was the guy who led UMBC to the 16-1 upset of Virginia in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Again, just another guy, just kind of given for how long he's been at UMBC since 2016, only 47 years old. But I'd be interested to see if maybe a guy like him kind of goes from maybe a long shot to realistic if he has, you know, really good season. You know, maybe if he has 21 season in his first year, and just given what his I guess I wouldn't say like reputation, but just what people view him as locally, given that UMBC win, especially Virginia,
right?
I think it would be kind of intriguing, but you know, one person mentioned it on this site, so thought it was an interesting name.
I feel like this is too you know, and I'm not one to say that we are a you know, a prestigious program, but this is a very big program for a guy to get this kind of a job based on 1 year, because really that's the only reason we know who Ryan Odom is, was the one season, the one win over UMBC. I feel like he would need to prove himself at least a little to me before we offer him this type of job.
Yeah, blind squirrel finds a nut. I mean, that one game. Now, he does bring UMBC to the tournament like all the time, so he was winning whatever division that is. But yes, that the reason everyone paid attention was because he beat a number one overall seed, and probably based on history and those numbers, that was a lot more about that number one seed than it was about them.
Right. Another guy that's a Maryland native, Kyle Smith out of Washington State, another one of the younger options out there. What's he look like as an option? Because when I look at his record, it doesn't look great right now in his couple of years he's been out there.
Yeah, another guy. He's from I believe Folsom, Maryland. Another young guy, 36, 31 overall. So I just think that he was a guy that, you know, 52 years old, picked up his 201st career win Wednesday night, actually. But just I don't know if he really moves the needle right now, but just a guy, just given his regional ties. He did take Washington State to three consecutive 21 seasons. Excuse me. He did that at San Francisco before going to Washington State. So maybe a guy that has to win a little bit more. But again, just with the regional ties, would be interesting to see if Maryland gets a look.
I can't ever root against a Cougar. I was born and raised in Falston, Maryland. So I guess go Kyle Smith. You're my number two.
Now you have a favorite.
Yeah, right. All right, so let's talk a couple of names that are being floated out there again by fans. There's no validity to any of these names. We have no idea what their interest is even in the program at all either, but these are names that are being brought up by fans. Some more longer shots. Nate Oates, head coach out at Alabama, is 47 years old. Put Buffalo on the map with two bids and then led Bama to the Sweet 16 last season. Any shot here you think of somebody like Nate Oates wanting to leave Alabama and what he's built there to come here?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know from financially. I know the buyout, and I think it's if he leaves during the season, it's $12.5 million. But then if he leaves after the season, it's $9.8 million. And then I think someone actually brought up the fact that if Musselman leaves after, we're staying on Nate Oates. But yeah, I mean, I just think a guy like Nate Oates, I don't know if Maryland can. Pry away someone with a more financially attractive offer than down in Alabama. Obviously, it's a step up from an exposure from a conference perspective, a program perspective. You know, but I don't know how viable it is right now. I think he would be a home run, 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10, even. There's no doubt that he should be the number one overall target. I just don't know if Maryland has all that money where they can go out and get them.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, you might be able to pull this off. I mean, obviously, the contract is a problem in itself. But Alabama has been dumping money into their basketball program, trying to get out of that, you know, SEC is football only and can't win anything else type mindset. There's a few schools down there that have tried that. Right. They've completely redone their arena, added more seats. It's gorgeous now. So, like, back in the day when basketball was just something you did waiting for football games, maybe, but Alabama's trying to change that, and you're not getting them out of there.
Right. Now, you kind of tease his name, Ahmed. Eric Musselman's another name that has been thrown out there at Arkansas. He got Nevada rolling with three bids in the four seasons he was there. And in his 3 years at Arkansas, has done really, really well as well. Any ties or any kind of connection there that might think that Maryland would come knocking?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of falls in that same boat as Nate Oates. Again, if Maryland was able to get him or Eric Musselman, again, that would energize the fan base, pack the arena. I mean, that is known, but it's just can Maryland ante up? So we'll see at this stage. Again, you have to think about the flip side. Maybe if Nate Oates, if they reach out back channels, things like that, engage the interest and, you know, they get back that this guy is very interested in potentially coming out. Then it becomes a conversation of, you know, how does Maryland get that money? But at this point, you know, I don't know how viable that is at this point for both of them. I just kind of have them in that same bucket.
I just don't know if we're ever going to pack the arena. I mean, I know I'm full going pessimist here. I just don't. I think that the expectations are so ridiculously high. I mean, this team was supposed to be good. We were wrong, yeah. But it was supposed to be good. And then, like the student tickets were selling out. No one was showing up to those seats. The fans weren't coming to those seats. So, like, I feel like this. Yeah, maybe if they show up and they go to a Final Four, and like only one or two players leave, that's not going to happen, guys. This is a one and done society. If you end up succeeding that well, the players are going to leave, and then the fans are going to be butthurt that we couldn't keep them around. Like, I just don't know what the expectation is, and I don't know if we're going to fill it up.
Well, I personally, go ahead.
No, good.
I was going to say, I personally do think that just there was just a lot more apathy towards Turgeon and just his towards not just like his style of play, but just the overall consistent frustrations. So I personally do think that Maryland will be able to give the next guy just a clean slate, move forward. I think there are a lot of fans that just kind of want to take the next step, and ripping the Turgeon Band-Aid off was step one.
I guess I would have expected the first game of Danny Manning, some of those people to show up and at least like cheer that they got what they wanted. Right. And that was even more empty.
I agree with your statement 100%. But a couple of guys, a couple of names that have been floated out there that I think would put butts in the seats immediately, but might not be worth the risk. And more than likely, Maryland's not going to even go down this road. But again, the names are being brought up by fans. And the big one that everybody knows, Rick Pitino. We all know the big things he did out in Kentucky and Louisville, but we also know the shady shit that he did out those places as well. He's now at Iona doing his thing down there. Do you think the name can overcome the risk in Maryland even attempts to talk to Rick Pitino?
Well, you don't like hookers at Louisville and strippers and money guns at Kentucky March Midnight Madness? You didn't like those things to do with college kids?
You don't want my answer to that question.
So, I mean,
or mine.
Sure. I do think that Rick Pitino would probably fill the arena for a couple games. But do I think that this school that believes themselves to be an Ivy League education and all this stuff are going to let this happen? No, they're not even going to like discuss this. They're going to be like, oh, nope, have a good day.
Yeah, I just don't see how it is viable.
Especially Rick.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if Maryland does come knocking, do you think Rick is listening, or do you think it just comes down to dollars and cents and Maryland wouldn't be able to afford him anyway?
Because a lot of what I've seen is Rick Pitino even himself is, I mean, obviously, you know, you can't always take public statements, you know, to heart, but I mean, it sounds like the consensus is he's just kind of happy where he's at Iona at this stage in his career. So I don't know if he wants to kind of take that next step, but we'll see. I'd be shocked if Maryland kind of gave him that answer or gave him that question, though.
Slightly more realistic, Fred.
Now, this name has also been floated out there.
It is a little bit better.
I don't know how much better it is. Haven't heard it a lot, but I have seen it out there. Sean Miller, if you're not familiar with that name, he was actually one of the favorites back when Turge was hired. But a lot of shit has changed since then. Right now, awaiting punishments from NCAA violations and at Arizona, where he subsequently was fired for basically pay for play. There's a whole documentary out there on the whole thing. It's pretty good. Sean Miller, any chance of coming to Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, with those, with the whole NCAA cloud, again, I'd be shocked. I think I'd maybe even argue he's more unrealistic than Patino, but maybe just because the fact that Miller's younger makes him a little more realistic. But either way,
just can't pay the players.
Yeah, yeah, just don't tell anyone.
I just think that what Sean Miller did, you know, a lot of people were doing and not getting caught or have gotten caught with a little bit less evidence. Patino was like on a whole level. Like, nah, we can't, like, he was just like, we're just going to do all this shady stuff. I'm sure things like that were being done, but not, we never caught anyone anywhere close to that level of just debauchery that he had in his programs. Right. So that's why I think because of the uppity snooty nature of our board, they might be a little bit okay with money because white crime's right in their wheelhouse, but the rest of the crimes, not so much.
I gotcha. All right, so those are the long shots, not worth the risk, but a couple of other names that have been floated out there that just to me, and I don't know what your guys' takes on them, but they just seem unrealistic overall. One, Thad Matta, 54 now. He obviously had a great run at Butler, Xavier, long run at Ohio State, 5 Big Ten titles while he was there. But right now, he's the current associate AD at Indiana. I don't think he has any interest in coming back to be a coach.
I've heard that. I actually know someone, a good family friend that is kind of plugged in at IU for a while. He told me that Thad Matta would. And I remember his name kind of came up last year during the contract extension and whatnot. But yeah, I don't really see it. It sounds like just between all the health issues and everything, I don't really see that being super viable. And he's kind of also taken more of like a behind the scenes role under or above Mike Woodson, but helping out in Indiana.
Right.
So I know I mentioned it a couple of days ago, just don't really see how viable it is, especially, for Maryland to take that next step.
All just depends if he hates his job or not. We've all been there. We've all hated a job.
That's true. Mine was Hollywood Video, though, not associate AD at Indiana.
Oh, you weren't getting paid $5 million to leave?
No, wasn't. Another name out there. Now, this was a big name. Coach for a long time at Michigan, John Boeheim, led the team to 9 tourney bids in his 12 seasons at Michigan. Took his, shot at the NBA, but realized quickly that wasn't for him. That failed up in Cleveland, the LeBron project that happened up there. John Boeheim, do you think he comes back as a head coach, and would he have Maryland anywhere on his radar?
Yeah, I don't know how viable that one is either. I just think the best is behind him, I think. And I just don't know how viable it is that he comes back. And I think Maryland, I don't know. I mean, again, with the portal, it kind of does change everything, but it's kind of hard to think that Maryland's not going to be in a rebuild, at least in year one under the new coach. So I don't know if Boeheim is the guy that Maryland wants that to be. And I don't know how realistic Boeheim. I haven't heard if Boeheim's interested.
Yeah, what's the point of rebuilding with someone his age? Like, if it works, right. it works for how long? 3 years? Like, right. It's I just don't see the point there.
It's not a long term solution. I got you.
Band-aid.
All right, now another name that's got a lot of Terp fans kind of excited, just because of obviously who he is, the name around the program, but as a coach, hasn't really done a whole lot yet to prove himself, and that's Juan Dixon. He was obviously an assistant under Turge for a little bit while he was here. He was a women's head coach at the University of DC. He's the men's head coach at Coppin currently. Again, hasn't done anything at a big program and really hasn't done a whole lot at the Coppin level yet either. Juan Dixon, realistic as a potential coach?
So I did a Twitter poll yesterday because I saw Jeff Goodman put out there one name that gathered some support was Juan Dixon. And that was the first Terp basketball player that I watched. I fell in love with him.
Yeah.
I think every Maryland fan holds a special place in their heart for Juan Dixon.
100%.
So the Twitter poll, just asking Maryland fans how they feel about it. No chance, not the right time, top 5 choice, we've got our guy. Those are the 4 choices. 55% said not the right time. And that's kind of the boat I'm in. I just feel like maybe in 5 years, I just don't know how viable it is that he comes in right now. I mean, he's 34-96 as a head coach, and that's right. Not even at a mid-major level. So that scares me.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not the right time for him, and I don't even know if it would be him as a ex-player that you'd be looking at. I think there's a better chance that the future holds for Vasquez especially, and maybe even a Steve Blake. I mean, Vasquez, did not have quite the NBA career that neither Juan or Blake did, but he has been working in the NBA at the assistant level. He's been behind the scenes going on, but Blake had the best NBA career of any of our Maryland basketball players during that period of time. And I just really, he is as close to Gary Turgeon as we'll ever see. The personality with that one, he's going to be getting ejected from games 3-4 times a year. So if you're really looking to relive the Gary Williams years, coaching that man up and getting him back out would be a thing. Not now, obviously. He doesn't have enough of the coaching experience, but he certainly has the basketball experience.
Right. Another last name we'll go over that's been floated out there, and this was kind of a recent name that had been floated out there. He has local ties to the Baltimore area. I'm pretty sure he played high school basketball at Dunbar, if I remember correct. Sam Cassell. He's just kind of been around the area for a long time. He was an assistant for the Wizards for a while. But that's really all the coaching prowess he has. He's been kind of passed around in the NBA as an assistant, but he has never really coached at all at the collegiate level. He's never been a head guy. I feel like if Sam Cassell is going to be a head coach somewhere, Maryland wouldn't be the first step for him.
Yeah, that one just kind of seems like a square peg in the round hole. Someone commented that on the site on Inside the Black and Gold. I did, like I said earlier, just a piece analyzing the candidates. But he is from Baltimore. You're right, from Dunbar. But other than that, I mean, he's been obviously after 15 years in the NBA, he's been with the Wizards, Clippers, and Sixers as an assistant. And he was one of the finalists for the Celtics head coaching job last year. Yeah, I don't, again, maybe he does have interest, but I don't know. You know, NBA is a lot different than college. And a lot of those guys, you know, recruiting and all that is a whole different ball game, but, will be interesting. Maybe Sam Cassell wants to take that opportunity as a chance to prove himself as a head coach, just doesn't really feel right.
Yeah, I don't know anything more to add on Sam Cassell. I think we've added pretty much everybody on this list. Is there any other potentials that either one of you guys can come up with?
No, I mean, there's so many other names. I just think, you know.
Yeah, 70% chance we didn't get the name, but we don't know them.
That's 100% true.
Yeah, I just think it'll be kind of interesting. I think there's a lot of guys. I think it'll be interesting that whether Maryland kind of goes after more experienced guy or if they go after a younger guy. So I think that once maybe we get some clarity on that, I think that could open up the path to maybe new names, new fits. So we shall see. But, you know, there's probably a good chance that one of the guys we mentioned, a couple of the guys, you know, eventually come in for an interview. So, you know, it'll be a long way till this gets resolved.
And I don't think that we're going to get any clarity until we see the guy that's live actively applying for the job do what he's going to do. They're not going to tell us anything until they see whether Danny Manning can take this team, do something with it this year to open their eyes to either keep or move on. Let's hear from the new coach now.
It seemed like a lot longer than 48 hours. that's not in the coaching manual. That's not in the coaching playbook. You know, it's not situations like that. And so we got the information, had a chance to visit with Turge. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of emotion, and rightfully so. And to the point of we were supposed to practice earlier in the day, and we pushed it back to give our guys a chance to digest. And we came back in, and I thought for what we got accomplished in terms of getting the guys to move up and down the court was good. But more importantly, we had a chance to sit down and talk, and everyone had a chance to express their feelings and what they were thinking. And we need to continue to do that because it's a tornado whirlwind of emotions. And they vary. And it will continue. And that's part of life. And so we just got to make sure we can continue to address that. We came back the next day, and I thought we had a really good practice. The energy level was good. Guys were spirited. And there was something where we felt like it was a good day for us. You know, today we didn't come out and do the things necessary to give ourselves a chance to win the game in terms of making enough plays. But I thought there was some fight. And, you know, we've got to continue to build upon that. So to answer your question, we as a staff just tried to be supportive of our guys, let them know that we're there for them. Also try to implement the game plan about what we were trying to accomplish and do out on the court. And, you know, that's been our focus, and that will continue to be our focus as we move forward.
Yeah, so that's the coach after the loss to Northwestern. Obviously an emotional moment for him. If you put yourself in Danny Manning's shoes for a minute, because to me, honestly, just listening to that clip, this sounds like it was just as much of a shock and news to Manning as it was to the fan base and to everybody else. This doesn't seem like something that they had been talking about for days or weeks. This seemed like something that they had to come in and make an adjustment to right away. And you know, Manning obviously has personal ties to Mark Turgeon. You know, these are guys that played college basketball together at the University of Kansas. So there's a much bigger relationship from a friendship standpoint outside of just basketball with these two. So this is a lot for Danny coming in, you know, again, to a situation where he's brand new to the staff. This is his first year. They got all these transfers coming in. He's expected to be the assistant to work with the bigs and get the bigs right. Now, all of a sudden, he's the head guy. It's a lot to ask for a guy, even in this situation.
Yeah, I thought the point where he mentioned that he was like, I came here to coach alongside my best friend to work with Mark Turgeon. I thought that part kind of that kind of stuck out to me. That's kind of why I just don't know how viable a guy like Manning is to be the ultimate permanent head coach. It just doesn't feel like something that would happen. But he is tasked with a big responsibility to complete the season.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like with that statement, that's the kind of move where, like, he might take this team to an Elite Eight and then tell us to shove it. That was Mark Turgeon's team, and you guys ran him out of town. Yeah. Not really that we wouldn't want him, but he's not going to want us. The first game did not go as planned, that's for sure. It looked like a lot of the same. A couple more players got some different minutes. Dockery was playing more, but still the same. 28% from the field, 14 turnovers, 16 fouls, including two techs, and one of the scariest basketball injuries I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, what's really mind-boggling about this team, because let's talk about the team, let's talk about this game, right? Like you said, 28% from the field in this game against Northwestern, that's been a continued trend with this team. And I'm sorry, but this is the University of Maryland. This is a Division I program, right? I don't understand the consistent struggles with shooting the basketball at this level. All of these guys can shoot the basketball. And it's not even like they're taking god-awful shots, but they're taking shots that they're not making at a high percentage, and they continue to do it week in, week out, game in, game out. I've just never seen a team struggle this bad. I don't know if it's just confidence or what it is, but it's a mess right now.
Yeah, they cannot shoot at all. It's like hard to watch, and it's not for lack of trying. I mean, like guys like Fat Ayala, sometimes Scott, I think had a couple, I think two or three games at this point where he's had double figures. But I mean, Fats and Ayala have had plenty of games where they're shooting 2 of 11, 1 of 10 from the field, and 0 for 5, 0 for 3. And especially Ayala, you could definitely tell in those first games in the season where they were trying to create those scoring opportunities. And it was kind of clear at the time going into the season, I guess, why Turgeon wanted Ayala at the two, because when you look at those scoring opportunities, a lot of those, he's just coming off the screens where he's shooting the same shots that he was making last year, especially down the stretch when he got hot. And they're just not dropping right now. Guys like, you know, Dante Scott, I still think tries to play some of the hero ball too much, thinks he's more of a point guard when, you know, he's really more of a forward, four man. But yeah, like you said, just the 3-point shooting, especially, there's just really nothing. I think you can go in with Kudus every single time. But at some point you have to be able to develop some inside out. Otherwise all these Big Ten teams are just going to collapse on you every game.
Yeah. For being a grad transfer, he looks like a freshman Bruno. Does he have talent inside? Sure. But he doesn't know what to do with the ball if he can't just immediately score it. That the big step with Bruno in that second year was if he got the ball and it was double teamed, he could find the open man, and that changed everything. Yeah. There's none of that. And it kind of blows my mind to be that far into your college career and seemingly incapable of doing so.
Yeah, that's definitely an area of his game that he's got to work on. But it's the entire team that struggled. As you said, Dante Scott's had a couple of games here. Hakeem Hart's had a couple of games there, but they have just not been able to put it together as a unit. And I don't know. I don't know if Danny Manning is going to be the guy to get things changed, but it's got to change quickly if the Terps want to be competitive in the Big Ten and really want a shot at another NCAA bid, where we all thought this team was pretty much a shoe-in for the NCAA bid with the amount of talent that they were bringing in. It might take time, we thought, you know, with getting them gelled and getting them working together, but we thought, you know, Eric Ayala was going to take another step, even though he, you know, he had done so well last year, but we thought he'd take another step as a leader and being over at that two guard position and have Fats Russell in there as the slasher. It just hasn't worked well. And Danny Manning's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah. You mentioned Hart with his like couple of good games going well. He's just one of those two guys. I mean, of course you want to keep a decent number, but really the ones that would make me so excited, if we can just keep Reese and Hart through this mess, because you know 90% of this team's leaving, maybe 100% of this team's leaving. If you could keep those two players and build, at least I would have something to watch the next couple of years, because I need something to root for, right?
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, Maryland's just, I will be kind of interested just given the time off that Maryland's going to have. We'll have some player availability on Friday with Danny Manning and some of the players. So, you know, seeing whether Ian Martinez is going to be available for this weekend's game against Florida, that'll be kind of interesting as well. But I just think that Maryland kind of has some opportunities where they maybe need to just try some things out. Obviously, fans got a chance to see Marcus Dockery a little bit to fill in after Ian Martinez went down. So just kind of mixing things up a little bit, maybe letting Ayala play the point a little bit. I personally don't, you know, I think Xavier Green at this point, it's kind of evident that he's more of the defensive than offensive guy. It just kind of moving Ayala to the one. And then maybe Ian Martinez, who definitely looks like a more natural two than one to me, kind of slotted him there. You know, just switching things up, kind of maybe Fats as a six man. I definitely think there are opportunities, but at the end of the day, you know, this team has to just find a shot. I think that's the biggest thing.
They got to shake something up. Something's got to change. And if that is moving him back over, Ayala back over to the one, because that makes more sense for the team, then it is what it is, you know. And if Fats got to be the sixth guy off the bench, that's an Energizer Bunny I like coming off the bench too. So I don't know. Something's got to change this team. And it starts at practice. It'll be interesting to see what kind of game plan Danny Manning comes out. Do we see the same results? Are we seeing the same type of, you know, play calling and passing the ball around the arc and just throwing up a last second shot? Like, are we going to see this, you know, the same stuff game in and game out, or does it develop and things change over the course of the season? And that'll ultimately determine Danny Manning's future with the club.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the problem is that he can't come in and you know, install X, Y, and Z. You know, that's different, especially midseason, especially given the circumstances of the season. So he's just gonna have to kind of build on Turgeon's initial philosophy and just add his, you know, a little sprinkle to it. Again, I don't know how viable it is from both parties, you know, that Danny Manning remains with the program after this year. Again, crazy things can happen. Just right now at this stage, I'm operating with the expectation that Danny Manning will be with the program next year.
Well, boys, we're at 52 minutes into this episode. So what we're going to do is we're going to split this up into two shows. We're going to do this as being the basketball show, and we're going to do another one for football. So make sure you stay tuned for all you football fans out there for episode two. Ryan, sign us off.
All right, it's a crazy time out there. People are calling for heads left and right, so make sure you duck. Everybody in College Park, chill out. Things are going to be okay. We're all going to get through it together. Until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the shell.